I'm Michelle Luxton, standing in for Suzanne Radford today. A very good morning and welcome to another edition of the Thursday Brunch, the show where we talk everything food and invite the people who know food best to join us around the Dubai Today table. This week, inspired by an article in the UK's Telegraph, we're going to be digging into this summer's latest food trends. I want to know from you, when summer rolls around, what is your go-to food or dish? It could be something that we have right here in the UAE, or perhaps it's something, a nostalgic dish that takes you back to your home country. To help me mull over these trends today, I have invited three Dubai experts into the studio. Riyadh Hamid is no stranger to the studio and to summer trends because he enlists the help of nature's very own summer workers, the bees, in his company, Balqis Honey. Welcome back, Riyadh.
Thank you very much. How are you doing, love? You're okay?
I'm okay over here.
Good.
Are the summer bees working very hard?
They are. They're always working hard for Balqis. We really do kind of like work them, and especially like in the summer. They do kind of calm down at the end of summer.
Do they take a break?
They do. It's like they have a six-week holiday, like school. They kind of have a little relaxation for 6 weeks.
And what do they do during their relax?
They kind of, they sit around massaging each other, you know, kind of, and they're getting rid of all the kind of, those little pollen grains that are at the back of their legs that they're always collecting and stuff. And so, yeah, they kind of, I love my bees, me. I love them.
That's Riyadh. And we also have Sally Prasa. She's also no stranger to the Thursday Brunch, calls herself a food and travel blogger, and I think we can all relate to this, a keen eater.
Absolutely.
She's the brains and stomach behind the blog My Custard Pie. And from studying her Instagram, I can see that she is an expert of the overhead food shot, which all Instagrammers need.
Well, there you go. You found my secret, haven't you?
Welcome, Sally. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good. And last but certainly not least, the man who has the job to plate food in the clouds at the world's highest restaurant, Atmosphere Burj Khalifa. Welcome, executive chef Christopher Graham.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you today?
Doing well.
Came down quite a few flights to...
Yeah, it took a while. I had to leave at 6 this morning.
Just to get here in time. Yeah. All right, Christopher, I wanted to start with you. When we're talking summer food trends today, and when you're perched in the kitchen, what floor up there?
122nd floor.
Okay, and you're looking
it's
down
pretty high
up. On us here in Dubai. What is sort of popping into your mind when you think summer food trends, summer menu? What is kind of popping up right now?
For summer for me is like, it's a celebration of all the produce. It's my favorite season to cook with. You have like amazing fresh fruits, lots of kind of like flowers and herbs, like wild forage leaves, kind of exciting things to cook with. There's a lot of variety and choice as opposed to like the winter when you're kind of stuck for choice a little bit sometimes.
And Sally, I've been spying your Instagram and I see you've been in the UK recently.
Yes.
I'm sure they're very much fully embracing the summer right now. What did you see in terms of summer trends?
I go straight for the, because I'm about local and seasonal produce, I go straight for the soft fruits. So with strawberries and raspberries, cherries are my favourite fruit. Although coming back to the UAE, again, I look for regional fruits and found amazing Tunisian peaches yesterday, which you literally have to sit in the bath to eat. And that's good for, I like fruits in salads. I think summer food is about assembly rather than lots and lots of cooking. So mixing up nuts, fruits, vegetables, honey maybe. that's what excites me in the kitchen.
And where have you found these soft fruits? Because I know a lot of people like advice about where they go to shop and buy.
If you want specifically these Tunisian peaches, I found them in Union Co-op. But I shop around, to be honest, and see who's got the best and shorter food miles so that it's actually seasonal, not in a cold store for 11 months. Yeah.
So Riyadh, we spoke a little bit about the bees who will be taking a break, but they're not taking one yet.
No.
And something I wanted to ask you about was flowers and honey.
Yeah.
Obviously it's summer, we've got beautiful flowers out there. How is your sort of your honey influenced by that, or how are the bees even choosing which flowers they're going to?
What it is, I mean, flowers are everything. I mean, it's the kind of life source, it's the oxygen for the bees, effectively. And so with us is that depending on the variety of the honey, we kind of place our beekeepers, because we work with cooperatives in the Yemen and different parts of the world, they place the hives close to the trees that are going to give them either a mono floral kind of type of honey, or whether it's going to be, you know, kind of a wildflower, which is kind of a variety of different flowers. So, for example, like the sidr, we make sure that there's, you know, it's sidr honey, so which comes from the sidr tree. So we kind of place all the hives around the sidr trees. And so it then becomes a monofloral honey. It's a single origin, one nectar kind of honey, which is beautiful. It's one of our most popular honeys, the sidr honey. So, it's you place the hives according to the variety or the flavors of the honeys that you want.
So let's dig into now the article of the UK Telegraph of what they deem summer trends. And I'd like to hear from you guys, yay or nay, from these ones. So the first one is decorative ice or ice lollies, and this is basically putting, you know, beautiful fruits or flowers or things in your ice. What do we think of this?
Oh, I'm totally guilty. If you see my Twitter today, my custard pie, I tweeted what I had in my freezer, and it could be fruit in flowers in ice cubes, because they just, well, for that overhead Instagram shot, they look absolutely gorgeous. But it does add that, you know, different garnish to drinks, salads. Even if you make, you know, one of those bowls out of ice, all with flowers in, you put your salad in there or your soft fruits. I just think it's gorgeous. And the fact that it's a temporary thing, it disappears before your eyes. I think it's really lovely.
Chef, how?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it looks lovely decoratively, but I think you can also use it for, like, preserving fruits as well. If something's kind of coming to the end of its life, you can keep it for a little bit longer.
True.
Maybe,
yeah,
even use it in a smoothie or something like that. But yeah, I mean, decoratively, it's not something that I would do, but I can see why it's a popular thing for sure. Definitely with flowers and herbs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I kind of completely agree with the chef. What the chef is trying to say, that he's not into it. He doesn't really like it whatsoever, but he thinks it looks pretty.
Thanks. Someone had to say it for me. I was beating around the bush.
He thinks it looks pretty, and I kind of agree with him, to be honest with you. I mean, I do like things that look a bit pretty, I suppose, but in terms of, am I really going to get anything out of it and stuff in terms of what
flavors
I want?
Flavours
and whatever, you know.
I think it's nice if you can go into your garden and pick the stuff, you know, a few little bits of herbs and flowers.
Yeah,
you know, I am guilty of buying them, but I sort of half think, oh, why am I doing this? Buying flowers to put in my food, but yeah.
Okay, so the list also recommends no more buns. The ultimate barbecue sauce, smoked everything in upcycled fruit. I'm going to be asking my guests about that next. Dubai Today, we're going to have in studio Riyadh Hamid. He is the Balqis honeyman. Sally Prasso, she is the stomach and brains behind My Custard Pie, an executive chef of the highest restaurant in the world. That's Atmosphere Burj Khalifa. And he is Christopher Graham. Before we jump into some more summer food trends, I want to do one of these.
Guess the ingredient.
So Riyadh and Sally are the keeper of the clues for today, and we have a fabulous prize for you, a 500 dirham voucher to enjoy at Atmosphere Burj Khalifa. Sally, you have clue number one.
So clue number one, today's mystery ingredient is one of the oldest cultivated flowering plants, and the Chinese were the first to experiment with today's mystery ingredient as food. Many varied recipes can be traced as far back as 3000 BC. In Roman times, today's mystery ingredient was used in many dishes, and the name of today's mystery ingredient comes from the French word, excuse my pronunciation, pensée, and means thought or remembrance.
Oh.
That's the first clue.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll have a lot more throughout the show today, because that is a fabulous prize and I'm sure a lot of people will want to get into the draw.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to this Telegraph article that's all about summer trends. We started off with decorative ice. That was a sort of, some people liked it, some people didn't really like it. Now let's look and move to no more buns. So what we mean by this is when you get a burger, you don't get your buns. You get maybe like lettuce leaf around, maybe if you're on a diet or something like that. Chef, I can feel you wanting to say something.
It's blasphemy. Life without bread. It's a sad life and I don't want to be a part of it. I can kind of understand. I've actually had a lot of requests in the past from people who kind of want burgers with lettuce wrapped around it instead of a bread bun. So, I mean, yeah, whatever floats your boat, really, but it's not really something that I would do. I think bread is a magnificent thing. I mean, such a large variety of different breads you can have, and it's an art making real decent bread, and who wants to eat a burger without bread? Come on.
And I think that, you know, in terms, even if you are on a diet, there are lovely healthy breads that you could get, I'm sure that you whip up in the kitchen
there's
there.
Lots of different varieties, and you know, grain-free, gluten-free, even if you wanted to go in that direction. So I think it's a step too far, abolishing bread. I'm not going to stand for it.
Riyadh, I also heard you take an intake of breath there.
Yeah, I mean, I love my buns, to be honest with you. I really kind of, I don't know what a burger would be without those buns. And so for me, to take away the bread would be kind of like, you know, just chopping your legs off or something like that.
people are desperate in the studio. Just
the right
take it away.
Here.
It's just, I mean, I had a bit of an issue with gluten at one point, because I was convinced by this doctor that when I did an allergy test, she said that I've got issues with gluten. And I kind of believed her for a little bit. And then I just kind of like, I thought, I don't believe that. And I went back to it, but I just changed the type of bread. I went to more of a sourdough. And that was blinking lovely. Mm. That was beautiful. It was lovely. I had it on toast with a bit of butter, some of my beautiful Yemeni honey, kind of all over it. It was beautiful. So it's about, exactly like the chef said, it's about the type as well. Yeah. Maybe one type of bread, it ain't for you. So just try something else, you know what I mean? Experiment, shop around.
Yeah. I'm definitely a bread snob. I would not have a burger. I think that's the point of a burger.
Did you say bread snob?
Definitely. But I can't bear the cheap, pappy, sort of, they almost dissolve, don't they? So a really robust bun with like a brioche or something is fantastic.
She makes her own bread, our Sally. She does.
Sometimes, yeah.
I didn't know people get so passionate about buns in the studio. But next one on the list is the ultimate barbecue sauce. And of course, we're referring to, we're going to be talking a little bit more detail about this later, but a barbecue outside. I'm South African, so we call it a braai. But barbecue sauce, chef, how would you make yours?
How would I make my barbecue sauce? How would I make my barbecue sauce? I put loads of different spices in it. Lots of kind of, I use the barbecue sauce to actually put on my meat while I smoke them. So the smokiness comes from the meat and you get the nice meaty textures and flavours. Just lots of spices, tomatoes, maybe a bit of orange juice perhaps, funk it up a little bit, but yeah.
Honey
definitely is one of them. How can you forget that, chef? Come on, for goodness sake. My God.
I dropped the ball.
Yeah, you did.
Bounties, honey, specifically.
There you go, exactly. But I mean, I love barbecue sauces. And I remember when I had these barbecue beans that came in as a part of this English breakfast at Baker & Spice, and they were beautiful. I mean, I love a good barbecue sauce. It is quite calorific, isn't it? There's sometimes, if you replace the sugar and put honey in, then it's not so bad. Mm. But sometimes the sugar content is quite high in a barbecue sauce.
Yeah. I don't know. It never features in one of my barbecues. I think maybe it's a British thing. And it's very American, isn't it? A classic barbecue sauce.
Yeah.
I like a smoky sauce. I think you eat less in the summer, but you want it to be spicy, funnily enough. So I'm much more likely to have a chili or, you know, sweet and savoury with like a honey and herbs on the meat, but not douse something on afterwards.
Yeah.
One of the other things, and maybe this links a little bit to the ice that we were talking about earlier, but edible flowers is on the list. And we have a challenge for Sally a little bit later, because Spinneys have supplied us with a little magical packet of their summer trends, and there might be edible flowers in there. We're not showing you yet, but stay tuned for that. We're going to make Sally create something for us. But chef, I know when we met, because we met a little while back during Ramadan, and when I met you, you had this very interesting contraption
on your chef's uniform.
I want to play the clip from when I noticed that, because I think this might link to the edible flowers.
They're like tweezers.
Okay, so is this, I'm just going to describe them. So this is these amazingly rainbow sort of coloured tweezers. Is this a chef instrument? What is going on here?
So basically this allows me to put things on a plate in a very specific way, very accurately, without kind of touching the food too much. So for example, if you want to put flowers or fine herbs or leaves or something in a very specific part of a plate, you can be more accurate with it and not damage the flowers. And also, I've got really big clumsy donut fingers, so it's a lot easier for me to use these little delicate tweezers.
So you're using those delicate for edible flowers and your clumsy thumbs?
Yes, I'm too clumsy with my hands, so I need the little tweezers. Flowers in general, I'm I am a fan of edible flowers, but I'm very much a kind of, even when it comes to the, when we were talking about the ice, I'm a firm believer that there's no point in doing something just for aesthetics. It needs to have a point, and you need to, it needs to, it needs to contribute something to what you're making, like the dish or the cocktail. So I use quite a lot of flowers in atmosphere, but I always make sure that they're specific to the dish in terms of flavor. And I don't just put a flower on because it's yellow or green.
You know? What do you use? Like borage flowers?
I use borage flowers. I use cucumber flowers. Mm. I use fennel flowers, chai flowers, garlic flowers. Lots of flowers.
Oh, fantastic.
Then they all contribute to the flavour of the overall dish, not just for to make it look pretty, which is a pet hate of mine. I hate when people just throw like cresses and flowers onto a dish just to say they have.
And Sally, you'll probably be using some of these later. Do you enjoy edible flowers?
Yeah, I mean, I am in your camp quite a lot, Chef. I do understand that. But sometimes you need that extra something. And we eat with eyes, don't we? I think if I was in atmosphere and, you know, every plate had to be perfect. But if I'm just got people around for a barbecue and I want to make a really show-stopping central piece, a great big salad and with some edible flowers in. I mean, it just looks, it brings oohs and ahs from the whole crowd and everyone loves it. So, yeah. That was hedging my bets there a lot. These look really pretty, these ones you've brought in. So
I have two more here. Smoked everything and upcycled fruit. I want to quickly get to those before we get to the news headlines. Smoking?
I smoke a lot.
Yeah.
I smoke a lot of things. I'm a big fan of smoking. Smoked everything.
We're not talking about cigarettes
here. I smoke cream for mashed potatoes. Oh. I smoke oil to make smoked dressings. I smoke meats, short ribs. I make my own bacon for breakfast in the restaurant. Obviously, I don't do that at home. I'm a big fan of smoke. I experiment with the different woods and different temperatures. I'm mad into it.
Isn't that the case, though? You just said you don't do it at home. And someone I know bought a smoker, and these are huge contraptions that live in your backyard. I think you used it about once. Isn't it quite difficult to do it in your kitchen, or have you got tips?
I've got an electric smoker in the kitchen because it's a lot more consistent and easy to use. I actually have a smoker at home, and I use it quite a lot during barbecue season.
Okay.
But it's high maintenance because I use coal and wood instead of the gas or electric. So you literally have to sit outside like the whole day for 8-10 hours stoking the flames and if someone wants to get into it, I would definitely recommend buying a gas smoker or an electric smoker because they're just easy, they're just set and forget, and you just sit back and just enjoy the rest of your barbecue.
And you can do a few things, I think, in a saucepan, can't you, with a cover and a grill, not a grill, what am I talking about?
You can do it in a pan, just cover the base of the pan and kind of put the chips around, heat it up on a stove and cover it, just leave it there. It's pretty simple. There's a lot of cool things to do with smoke.
My name is Michelle Luxton. I'm standing in for Suzanne Radford, and today we're talking summer food trends. And so far we've talked decorative ice, edible flowers, no more buns, the ultimate barbecue sauce, and smoked everything. And I do want to hear from you at home. What is your favorite summer dish? What really gets you excited about the summer when it comes to food? But before we get into all of those, I want to do one of these.
Food news.
So every week we scour the presses and look for some great stories about food, and I've got a piece here out of The Guardian that goes as thus. Nigella Lawson came under fire this week for posting a link, an innocuous-looking recipe from an old-fashioned tomato salad, boasting, her outraged audience claimed, just two ingredients. And someone wrote, a Facebook comment goes as thus, I really hope this is a joke. This dish of cherry tomatoes and a squirt of salad cream. Get over yourself, for goodness sake. So what do we think? Is two-recipe ingredient, like, is it sacrilege? But I think of things like jam on toast. It's a bit of comfort food sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that sometimes simplicity is really nice, and it's lovely, and it's quite refreshing in certain dishes. Bit tomatoes and a bit of salad cream. I mean, that's like taking the mick, isn't it, really?
It was very Instagrammable, I will say, because she kind of lined them all up, and it looked very, you know, I don't know if that was the only purpose.
Yeah, I think it's a bit too undressed.
Yeah.
You know, kind of, you need something a little bit more to call it a salad. You need, you know, I mean, you need something there to kind of like, you know, give it a bit of oomph, but just a bit of salad cream and tomatoes, you know, that ain't doing it for me. What do you think, chef?
Nah, salad cream. I mean, as a chef, obviously, I would not agree with a 2-ingredient salad with salad cream and tomatoes. And especially as Nigella, she's supposed to be educating people about food. That's and she's making a career out of like selling these recipes, yes, and building a profile. It's just like, it's kind of like lazy. Like she's almost, yeah, not respecting her audience a, yeah, little bit.
Lazy.
Yeah, I think people can discover salad cream and tomatoes for themselves, and maybe she should work on something a little bit more
ambitious.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Exactly.
For me, it's calling it a recipe that is the big problem. It's a serving suggestion. So you said jam on toast. Jam on toast is a serving suggestion. Mm. Bread and butter is a serving suggestion. Salad cream on tomatoes is a serving. I mean, wonderful olive oil, salt and pepper on the best tomatoes.
Amazing.
You can't beat that. Yeah. Nobody can beat that. But it's not a recipe, is it?
Yeah, I think that's the problem, is that we're looking to someone like Nigella for inspiration and for things to create we've never thought of or never been able to create before. But even me, who's seriously handicapped in the kitchen, I think I could have a go.
Yeah.
You could come up with something like that. I mean, it's just not very ambitious, is it? And I think exactly like you said, people look towards these kind of chefs, these homemade chefs, as you know, something that, you know, you'd get something out of them a bit more interesting that what ordinarily you wouldn't do at home, you know. Mm. So but it's really when you come up with that kind of serving suggestion, exactly like what Sally said, you just, it's not very impressive, it's not very, you know, you're not impressed with it.
Yeah,
that's my story today. Riath, you've got one for us, one that is making your heart under the collar.
Yeah, it was, well, this the sort of, it says here, this is from Munches, and hot dog eclairs are the most beautiful thing you never knew what you wanted.
I mean, the voice just explains how you feel about
this. I mean, it just, to me, it just, I mean, I'm looking at a picture here, which looks kind of like an eclair, but it's like a hot dog. And it's just so repulsive. Absolutely. You want to cry. It's that ugly and...
So basically, I think what they're trying to do, and I've seen this a lot, people do this a lot, where they call one food something, but it's actually something else. And we've seen this before with, you know, ice cream, pizza-flavoured ice cream.
Exactly.
It's
foods that are dressed up like something else, exactly like you said. And the thing about it is that why exactly do they have to do things like this?
Chef.
People need to stop. You all need to stop. Stop playing with food. I mean, I make a job out of playing with food, but I'd like to think I do it in a different way than hot dog eclairs. I think this kind of trend of, you know, like mutant foods and over-the-top giant burgers and sundaes the size of your head, yeah, like, it's, yeah, getting a bit much now. Like, exactly. I'd like my Facebook feed to be a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, it's mad.
But on the high end, I went to... a Michelin star restaurant, well, here, and I had a plate of stones, and one was edible.
Oh,
and I must say,
guilty of that.
It was. I would never have thought this was a good thing, but actually, it sort of plays with your perceptions, and it was, yep, incredible. I wouldn't like to eat like that all the time, but as far as pushing the boat for morphing things, it was amazing.
Did you say that one of them was not a, was a, were they were stones?
They were all stones.
So you could have cracked a tooth.
You could have cracked a tooth, and I think one waiter brought one without.
Choked.
Yeah, you could, big stones.
Okay.
But then you bit into one that looked exactly like the others, I promise you.
Did they identify which one it was?
No, you had to find.
That's shocking. That's shocking.
Is that on your Instagram, Sally? Because I'd like to see that video.
Yeah, a while ago, but I'll have a look. Yeah.
That's quite shocking, Sally, to be honest with you. And you didn't pay for that, obviously, did you?
Did they warn you which one was edible?
No. Wow. Because one dish came out to one of the people, it was a preview, and they forgot to put the edible one. Oh. Which was a bit of a mistake.
I would have reported them to Consumer Rights.
I think it's the idea of people are trying to be different. Chef,
yeah,
you talked a little bit about mutant food earlier. And these, I know which...
those freak shakes.
Milkshakes you're talking
about. Sushi Ritos.
People buy them. People go to these restaurants. People enjoy them.
It's true. But they're very short-lived kind of trend.
Lifespan.
They come in and they go out just as quickly, so I'm all right with that.
And do they eat them or do they Instagram them? I've seen people order that stuff and not touch it, because you cannot eat that. you know, those freak shakes. One person could not drink a whole freak shake, plus the donuts on the top.
Yeah, if you're going to have a good lie down after that,
I think that people should be concentrating on quality over quantity, and again, aesthetics and making things look crazy, and, you know, just concentrate on making something really good that you're going to enjoy and remember and be able to have again and again, instead of something that's a novelty, you know?
I think people are just desperate in this sort of day and age just for like fame and notoriety. People are just desperate for kind of attention and being the first of this, or having, you know, kind of the look of this. And I think it's just gone too far. It's just gone to a point where it's kind of going from the sublime to the ridiculous. You know what I mean?
So from the sublime and ridiculous mutant food over to you, Sally, what have you got in terms of a food news story today?
Well, the, you know, the rise and rise of all these different food days, food months, but there's one that's been around since 1984, and in fact appointed by Ronald Reagan when he was president. And actually in the UK, in the US, it's National Ice Cream Month. Lots of people will be saying hooray. I actually don't like ice cream very much. Don't want to hate me. But and the third Sunday of the month is National Ice Cream Day, and he encouraged everybody to go out and enjoy this fun and nutritious food. I would take him up on that claim, but go out and eat ice cream. But I want you all to guess, they did a survey, what's the favorite flavors, the top five favorite flavors in the US?
Oh, in the US?
Yeah, but what's number one?
Is it? It's always vanilla, isn't it? Or is that too bland?
I'm not telling you. Maybe the readers...
People are obsessed with chocolate, aren't they?
Maybe.
Chili and jam?
I'm going to be different. I'm going to say salted caramel.
That is very trendy right now.
That is very trendy. Yeah. And I love salted caramel.
But it's good
caramel.
And tasty. Yeah, it's the
best.
Oh,
I love that. Oh, yeah. God.
Okay, so while we try and guess what is the favourite ice cream of the Americans, Chef Christopher, you have a story for us today as well.
I do, indeed. So recently I read that Gordon Ramsay has hired a group of consultants to help him with his purchasing following the Brexit decision. Obviously, it's quite interesting. It hasn't really hit us here. I don't know how it will. But food agreements and people buying food from inside of the UK and the rest of the EU, obviously now that's increased the cost for a lot of restaurants. I'm just waiting to see whether or not it'll affect us and how it will affect us. But it's definitely... I didn't really think that would happen. As a chef, when Brexit came about, it wasn't really like, oh, this is going to happen. But now it's interesting to see how it's impacting my
food,
industry.
Yeah, food was my first thought, and Brexit, I was disappointed. Really? And things like the protected designations, you know, the around, that's an EU thing. So the things that we have, like, you know, protected, as, you know, Lancashire cheese or something like that, where's that going to go? We'll have to make our own. I don't know.
It could well actually benefit us, it being in this region. It could benefit us getting decent import from the UK,
maybe,
instead of them going to the EU. It remains to be seen.
It's kind of it's interesting because all of a sudden, you know, you've got this kind of bloc, the European Union, and with all these laws and trade agreements, because that's what it's all about. It's all trade agreements. We've had issues with bringing some varieties of honey, in, for example, into Europe, because there's no trade agreement with that country with Europe. So they have to start all these kind of negotiations, and it takes ages. But to think now that a country is kind of like deciding to scrap those laws and agreements with the bloc, and new trade agreements are going to have to be done with the UK, with all countries around the world. And it's quite, I mean, it's a mammoth task. And I think it will affect everybody. I think it will affect everybody on sort of every sphere, you know. So there's no doubt that I think food, as well as other kind of areas of people's lives, it's going to affect.
Yeah, I'm worried about the amount of US things that will go into the UK. At the moment, a banned, like pasteurised eggs. You know, lesser quality stuff will be allowed in.
I'm worried about, especially the genetically modified stuff, which is huge in America, which has been, a lot of it is banned in some parts of Europe. That kind of is worrying as well, that it's seeping in.
Let's hope they keep the regulations.
And I think about things like, you know, things that come from particular countries that, you know, you love, I don't know, Italy or Spain, things that you just love getting in. If you're a chef like Gordon Ramsay, and you're used to having these things easily come in over on a truck, you know, it must, are they going going to be adjusting their menus? Are they going to? It might be slightly depressing to think, oh, I'm not going to be able to get on the get those tomatoes from Italy or whatever it may be that you want to get on your menu.
Yeah, that would be horrible.
Or the truffles, you know, or your whatever, the certain type of onions or certain type of mushrooms. Or it does. I mean, there's. I mean, it's interesting because that's what all these trade agreements that. You know, that they're looking at doing with Theresa May but it's they're going to have to come up with a deal. I mean, England is too big of an important country in the world for you know, I believe anyway, for any issues with trade, to have any kind of trade issues. You know, it's an amazing country, and I don't think it's going to have any kind of issues with trade, hopefully.
Guess the ingredient. So today we have a fabulous prize for you, 500 dirham voucher to enjoy at Atmosphere Burj Khalifa. We have had one clue go out so far. Number two, Riyath.
Okay, so the cultivated edible version of today's mystery ingredient is also known as Lady's Delight and Stepmother's Flower. And the wild variety of today's mystery ingredient is known as Johnny Jump Up and Love in Idleness. Isn't that lovely? That
Johnny Jump Up.
Yeah, Johnny Jump Up. I've said it properly. Yeah, Johnny Jump Up, and Love in Idleness. What's that all about then?
Oh, I have
Lady's
no
delight,
idea.
Eh?
I don't know what today's mystery ingredient is. But after this, we're going to be coming back. Chef Christopher is going to be baking or cooking us something. Welcome back to the Thursday Brunch. I'm Michelle Luxton, standing in for Suzanne Radford. And if you hear any clunking happening in the background, some sound effects, kitchen sound effects, that's Chef Christopher. He is getting something ready and plating it for us. Before we get into that, I want another one of these. Guess the ingredient. Fabulous prize we have today. 500 dirham voucher to go and eat at Atmosphere Burj Khalifa. Sally, number three, we're on to...
Today's mystery ingredient is used in many regional cuisines, including Asian, European, and Middle Eastern. Today's mystery ingredient has gained popularity as a creative and innovative ingredient for the culinary world and is added to food to provide taste, aroma, and splashes of vibrant colour.
Now, you know, I used to produce the show a very, very long time ago, and I'm quite surprised because generally at this time we would have had someone SMS in avocado. I know that it's not an avocado, but every single week, I think we used up avocado a very, very long time ago in the mystery ingredient, but I'm a little surprised. There are a few messages coming through, a lot of right answers today. Well done. But I wanted to bring up another news article that I've seen today, and it's 10 American foods that aren't American. Now, the 4th of July was the other day, and we were celebrating everything that... America has given us Hollywood, rock and roll, Elvis Presley, reality TV, many, many other things. And food, we did talk about food. And I feel kind of sorry for them because I'm looking at this list and everything that, you know, they kind of call theirs and love is not apparently. So number one, the hamburger is apparently from Germany.
Yeah.
Number two, donuts are from the Netherlands.
God.
And they don't spell it right, honestly.
Yeah.
Don't all hate me. I'm very British.
So spelling, D-O-U-G-H-N-U-T-S?
That's how I spell it.
Okay. Hot dogs are from Germany and Austria.
And they do good ones. Oh, gorgeous.
Ketchup. I had no idea that ketchup was from China.
What? Are you serious, Michelle?
This is what this article says, and it's from the Huffington Post, so I assume that it's quite accurate. Pickles are from Mesopotamia.
Yeah, I thought they were.
Of course you did.
Apple pie. I think they've taken the apple pie and tried to do different things with it. Pecan pie, those sorts of things. But apple pie comes from England.
Yeah. I sort of get that they've made pecan pie and apple pie an American thing, and I don't say it's the same as a British one either. I think it's gone, they've sort of adapted it and made it their own.
Michelle Luxton standing in for Suzanne Radford while she's on her holidays. Suzanne is away, but nothing has changed in the studio. We still have a panel of food experts, as we do every Thursday on Dubai Today. Riyath Hamid is an expert of bees and honey, as he produces Balqis honey. Sally Prasa calls herself a food and travel blogger and a keen eater, aren't we all? And she's the capable hands behind the highly popular blog My Custard Pie. And last but not least, Christopher Graham is the executive chef who works in the sky at Atmosphere Burj Khalifa. Now, before we get back to talking to everybody about what chef is plated up, I want to do one of these.
Guess the ingredient.
So how many have we done so far? We've done three clues so far, I think. So we're on to number four.
Okay, so today's mystery ingredient has a taste reminiscent of grapes and mint, and was cultivated by the Greeks to use in herbal medicine. Today's mystery ingredient contains phytochemicals that provide health benefits, are the high in vitamin A and vitamin C. They also contain very few calories and therefore shouldn't be used to replace meals.
So if you know that answer, you will go into the draw. You have to text us 4001 or for free via the Dubai iMessenger app, and you could win a 500 dirham voucher to go enjoy a dinner or a lunch or something at Atmosphere Burj Khalifa. I've been before. It is absolutely fabulous. And Chef, something that, you know, if you get to sit around the edge and look down, which I highly recommend, make sure you try and get a window seat. It's impressive how high you are.
Yeah, it's always a lot higher than you expect it to be. I go up sometimes, I look out the window and I'm like, wow. It doesn't look real sometimes, especially when you look over like Dubai Mall, the downtown area with the fountains and everything. It just looks like Lego.
It does look like it, or little ants.
Yeah,
little ants.
Other cars driving around. It's like a Skeletrix.
And it's also almost hard to comprehend, because I know that when you so something as a point of reference, a dress hotel, so that is way down.
Yeah.
And you kind of, we're looking up at this massive hotel. So is that kind of, does that inspire you for your menu? Are you influenced by that?
Not necessarily. I try and just keep quality, really. I don't really look for inspiration from the building we're in, to be fair. Although when we're talking about the building and the comparing it to the other buildings around, a really surreal experience is when you go up there early in the morning for breakfast, which we're starting next month, and there's a fog that goes over the skyline of Dubai, and you have all of these iconic big buildings like, you know, Emirates Towers and the Address, like you said, and they're kind of like poking through the top of these clouds. It's like a carpet
of clouds. Just peeking out, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's really, really cool.
That looks
experience.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Absolutely stunning. So talking about your menu, you have your first dish for us that Sally is going to try. Tell us a little bit about what you have up for us first.
So we have a parfait of foie gras, which in the middle has 100% chocolate, like cacao paste, and a cherry and Szechuan pepper jelly. There's a foie gras ice cream and a cherry kind of gel, and then that's garnished with a little powder of Szechuan pepper, and there you go, and some fresh cherries, and it's served with some brioche on the side.
All right, so Sally's gonna have a little taste us whilst she is munching there. I want to have a look at the text line, because we had a couple of people texting for the mystery ingredient. Algae guy has texted, no, that's not correct. Someone has texted yogurt. Nope, that is not. We've also had a follow-up on something that we were talking about before the news, and that's what America gave us in terms of food, because I was reading this article that said 10 American foods that aren't American. It was because of the 4th of July. But something that we've got Jane, who's texting, America gave us portion size. And that made you giggle, Riyadh, because it's true. In America, they're very famous for their portion
sizes. They're huge. I mean, they are huge. And I remember when... going to America, I was just the first time I was absolutely astounded when I asked for pancakes and going for breakfast in New York, and I just couldn't believe it. I'm like, wow, I'm a big eater, but these portions are just like ridiculous.
Yes.
And it's like, and imagine sort of eating out maybe twice or three times a day. Some people do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the level of the portion size, like, God, it's quite crazy.
It reminds me a little bit of the diners and that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Your bottomless cola or your coffee or that sort of thing. So, Sally, are you ready to reveal?
Slightly munching here.
Yes, tell me.
I have to say, and I've got to be really honest here, it is absolutely divine.
It looks amazing.
Chef is punching in the air.
Is.
Victory, yeah.
I was expecting a slaying. thank you.
It's... You've transformed the foie gras, which is obviously a slightly controversial. I think it's chalk or cheese, isn't it, whether people eat it or not. And I won't go into that right now. But it is very, very light. Sometimes it can be a bit heavy. And pairing it with that white chocolate, I never have thought. If that was on a menu, I'd never order it, because it sounds just too weird. But it actually works really well. And I, as I said, I don't like ice cream, and I'm not particularly keen on very cold starters. But is that a chocolate crumb under it?
Yeah, it's like a bitter cacao chocolate crumb. So it
sort of adds a softness and tempers the cool, slightly savoury ice cream. It is fantastic, and with the bursts of cherry. And that Szechuan powder is very, very... It looks like snow or something. I didn't know what it was on the plate. It really is exceptional.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So if I eat foie gras once a year, which is about when I eat it...
I'm glad it was mine.
Yeah. it did look absolutely beautiful. So, yeah.
We're now moving to the opposite end of the menu, because we have something that's bringing it in front of him. He's been waiting. I've told him to hold back. Yeah. Chef, what have you put in front of him?
Okay, so I've done a kind of play on a traditional summer for me. So we've got a play on rhubarb and custard. So we have a rhubarb tart on the base of the plate, and on top of that is a blown sugar sphere, which is a hollow, and inside we've filled it with a spuma of Catalan cream, which is similar to custard, but a little bit spicy. And then also inside the sphere is a strawberry and basil sorbet. And then that's surrounded by some strawberries, a little bit of crème anglaise custard, rhubarb gel, and some strawberry-flavoured sherbet powder.
Leave some of that custard for me, Ria.
Yeah, Sally's
digging in. Hold
Yeah, that, okay. For me, that's my ultimate summary experience.
So, Riath, we need, once you've taken it in,
tell us. I'm ready, Michelle, I'm ready.
tell me, please. I'm so jealous.
It's beautiful. I mean, it really is. Imagine this kind of like white bubble, which is a sphere, this kind of like sugary sphere. And inside it is, you kind of break it up. It's kind of like breaking glass. You can hear it kind of getting into it. And you've got this beautiful kind of cream, almost kind of a custardy, sort of spiced, and all around it, there's all these different little there's a sorbet, obviously, which is with the whole thing, and the different fruits and the spices. It's just a beautiful little sort of symphony of gastronomic amazing flavors.
Whoa.
It really is delicious.
Well, thank you, sir.
You're welcome, chef.
And chef has been very generous, because you've actually given us this recipe. Haven't you shared with us?
Indeed.
It's going to go up on our blog, on the Dubai Today blog. So talk us through a little bit, a couple of tips, if you could, if you were going to attempt something like this at home.
Keep it simple. I would say keep it simple. Don't overstretch yourself. Always make sure that you read the recipe through and know exactly what you're doing in your head, start to finish, before you do it, and don't kind of leave anything to chance. I would simplify the recipe that I put online.
Okay, because I was going to ask you, I always like to know, how hard is the recipe? Are we talking beginner, or are we talking Michelin star chef?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about, blowing sugar into a sphere with a pump, which I don't think everyone at home is going to do. And I'm pretty sure there's only a handful of us who have an espuma gun at home.
Gun,
this thing. It's like when you go to Starbucks and they have their cream, it injects CO2 into a liquid to make a kind of like shaving foamy texture. So yeah, that's what the cream is inside.
Sally's had a moment, because she tore it away from me. She said, give it to me, I'm going to have a try.
Tearing is the right word. Yeah.
Tell me.
Yeah, no, I'm going to criticise this dish.
Ooh.
Not enough custard on
there.
It's delicious, but it needs
here comes
more.
The spuma. What is it? The spuma.
It's just giving him more custard.
This one.
That's the. Oh, that one.
That's absolutely fantastic.
What is that? Is that the?
That's the crème anglaise.
Okay.
There we go. What you want is what you get. Sorry.
I've got a very indelicate portion of custard on the plate now, and I'm very happy. You won't hear from me.
I think Riath ate the custard.
I ate it all, actually, yeah. I kind of spooned it all. Mm. The thing is, you're the custard queen anyway. Mm. It's never enough for you. Whatever amount you give you always want more.
Now, I want to tear Sally away from the plate for a second, because Spinney's heard that our theme for today's show was summer food trends. And they've sent a packet down and they've said, these are a couple of the ingredients that we know that our customers will enjoy when it comes to summer food trends. So, Sally, we're going to put you to the challenge to plate something. But first, I want you to open up the packet and tell us what's in there.
Well, this is very exciting. I did look in this bag earlier and noticed that there were some really pretty edible flowers.
Okay.
And they look very nice. They've been flown from South Africa, which is not too far from the UAE, so they kind of get my approval on the fairly sort of regional. Very pretty purples and yellows and white. I won't put them near chef's hands because he said he didn't like them. No, but I might persuade you.
And he's got clumsy hands.
Clumsy
well.
Thumbs.
Yeah, yeah. I need some of your tweezers because there's some beautiful micro herbs. There's some baby carrots. They're very nice with tops on. A gorgeous quinoa salad. Love quinoa. Spiralized vegetables.
What carrot. Do we think of spiralized vegetables? Do you use that, chef?
I would spiralize my potatoes to make a rosti for breakfast.
Okay.
What else can I spiralize? I have one and I use it sometimes.
Mm-hmm. It's not a I saw a rosti made thing. Out. Sorry, I saw a rosti made out of courgette the other day, which you could do. That would be nice and crispy, wouldn't it? Spiralized beetroot. Actually, that looks rather beautiful. Baby vegetables, baby marrow, and I have got my eye on those strawberries. Really perfect strawberries with Roda's clotted cream. Ooh, you haven't, lovely. Honestly, I haven't got my hands on proper clotted cream in the UAE until this moment.
So there's lots in that packet and you've just got to start brainstorming what you're going to do
absolutely.
With it. Sticking with something that you talked about a little bit earlier, and that was ice cream, because you brought up a food news article about how it's ice cream month or ice cream day, or something happening in America, and you asked what is America's favorite, and when we mean America, we mean the USA, their favorite ice cream flavor. So we've had Richie text in and said vanilla followed by chocolate and butter pecan. That's his order. Oh. Can you reveal? Because I thought vanilla a little bit earlier. Chef said, you said salted caramel.
Salted caramel, yeah.
And Ria thought chocolate. So what is the answer?
Well, this one, the survey was conducted by the International Dairy Foods Association, and they market ice cream, so it should be fairly accurate. You were right. Vanilla, number one. Riath nearly right, chocolate number two, but number three is cookies and cream. That's very American, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mint chocolate chip, which I think that's a divisive one. I can't abide it, but some people absolutely love it, don't they? Chocolate chip cookie dough, another, I think it's very, very US centric, which you're not surprised about. But buttered pecan at number six, cookie dough makes appearance again at number seven, and then strawberry at number eight. So, yeah.
In studio with me today, I have Riath Hamid. He is the honey man from Balqis Honey. I also have executive chef Christopher Graham from Atmosphere Burj Khalifa and Sally Prosser, who is the mind behind the blog My Custard Pie. And before the break, we made Sally open up a very special pack that was sent to us from Spinney's, full of summer food trends, because that's a theme of our show today. And Sally, you've been busy during the break. Tell us what you're thinking. Tell us what's inspiring you.
Well, probably to Riath's delight, I've started with the dessert, because those strawberries, and I couldn't wait to open the clotted cream, and it's really good clotted cream with a layer. So for anyone who doesn't know about clotted cream, it's very, very English, and it's a thick cream made in a particular way, and it has a crust on the top, a sort of buttery crust, and you sort of break your spoon through into it, and it's a classic for strawberries and cream or a cream tea, and it's a really good one. So I've opened the tub of that, and there's some really perfect strawberries around the outside. So I like to keep things quite simple. And strawberry flowers are white. And there's some really lovely white pansies with little yellow middles. So I've sort of laid those around the strawberries. So it almost looks like there's a little carpet of strawberries still in the field, but with the clotted cream in the middle for you to dip into. And I've just opened a really beautiful little pot of the Balqis Sidra honey, and I'm going to drizzle that over, because sometimes strawberries, especially when they've flown a while, they don't get quite the sweetness, although I haven't tasted these. They look pretty good, but a little tiny bit of really, really good honey. And the Balqis honey is very thick. It's got a beautiful texture, so it sort of sits on the strawberries. So yeah, simple. It's probably a serving suggestion rather than a recipe, but you know, on a white background as a flat lay, it would also look very nice on Instagram.
Maybe we can look for one of those somewhere. You can find like a white sheet somewhere. We can try it. Now, you mentioned the honey there. I want to take it back to Riyadh, who is behind all the honey. And you know, I listen to the show regularly, and you are a regular contributor. And something that I was thinking about, and I've always wanted to ask you, is I love putting honey in my tea, but I'm really worried that I'm doing something dangerous to the honey. Dangerous, probably a bit of a strong word, but yeah. I'm ruining the honey, I'm ruining the taste. How can we enjoy honey in our tea?
So, you know, you're right, actually. I mean, if you're going to put some raw honey into a boiling water, it is dangerous. That is the right word, because you're killing it. And so raw honey, it's alive. You know what I mean? It's a beautiful, amazing sort of liquid that's sort of naturally full of vitamins and minerals and, you know, all these kind of essential things, nutrients that you need for your system. It's alive. And so the best way to have it with a drink is, so if boiling water's, you know, if it's going to be boiling, it's 100 degrees. Really, the natural kind of like hive temperature for bees is around between 35 to 38 degrees. Could be a little bit higher, maybe edging towards 39 degrees in a hive if it's kind of in the summer months. So honey above that is a sort of, you know, a principle that in terms of heat, you will start to kind of destroy those kind of characteristics of honey in terms of the vitamins and the minerals. So it's really good to have the water kind of just warm. I mean, I kind of, when I have like herbal teas and stuff, I never kind of have it as boiling and throw the honey in. So I kind of like to make the warm water, kind of not boiling. If the water's going to be, I know it's kind of a bit crazy to try and judge, but warm water, or make it a boiling, make your sort of tea boiling with boiling water, and just let it kind of sit there for kind of 10 minutes. Just let it kind of calm down so it's kind of reduced the temperature, and then put the honey in. Then you can enjoy both. You get the benefits of all the minerals and the nutrients of the honey in, and at the same time, you've got this delicious tea that's been sweetened.
So, Christopher, you've got something else for us today.
I have.
We're sort of swapping things around now. We started off with the sort of starters. We went to dessert, and now we're going into what have you? Oh, you're handing it. Riyadh is ready for this one. Tell us
more
what
like
we have.
A snatch.
Here's a snatch. Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Okay. So we have a beetroot cured mackerel, which was also smoked. Talking of smoking, we cure the mackerel in sugar, salt, and beetroot juice, and then we smoke it lightly for about 2 to 3 hours. That's served with some pickled cucumber and apple, a horseradish cream, and that's topped with, subject of the day, fennel flowers.
Oh.
So there we go.
Okay, so Riyadh is chewing. I'm going to ask him to pass that plate around to Sally, maybe.
I don't want to pass it around, yeah. Michelle. I don't want to.
Oh, he's Joe, you didn't tell
me
how
flower
difficult this one
was. And that's my first ever fennel flower to my knowledge. And it's a delicate, sort of almost peppery flowery taste. So I totally get using flowers relevantly. Absolutely stunning.
So while Sally's having a taste of that, let's have the verdict.
I love mackerel. It just looks really kind of beautiful. I mean, the amazing things with these kind of top chefs is that they make things so kind of artistic and beautiful and well designed that it's almost like you don't want to eat it, but when you do, it's just beautiful, and it has all those elements that he mentioned. You know, that beetroot, first of all, you don't even know that it's a mackerel. It looks like this, you know, he's kind of dressed up the mackerel in this beetroot kind of look. It's a long sort of thin, it looks like a long thin piece of rhubarb, but it's not. It's a mackerel that's been dressed up with some beetroot and some beautiful little kind of condiments, and it's delicious.
Sally?
Thank you, sir.
Have you had a moment to
really
ingest?
Good. Really good. Yeah, I'm very much about simple food and tastes. So, yeah, I'm going to high-end restaurants sometimes. I think people overcomplicate things, but this is taking, you know, really, really good ingredients and making it look beautiful on a plate. It looks worthy of atmosphere and very, very delicate and pretty, but it delivers on all the... There's not a spare ingredient on that plate. It's absolutely beautiful.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Guess the ingredient.
So talking about atmosphere and Chef Christopher, we have a 500 dirham voucher to give away on the show if you can guess the mystery ingredient. I will say that a lot of people have been texting some different things in. It is not turmeric. No, it is not yogurt. There are some right answers, and I will say that we might have mentioned it in the show today. Sally, you've got clue number one, number five?
Number five. Mm-hmm. Today's mystery ingredient can be candied, can be used as a garnish, or tossed into salads for colour. Clue. Today's mystery ingredient is ideal to candy because their simple shape and strong structure holds up well under the sugar's weight.
Michelle Luxton standing in for Suzanne Radford while she's away on her holiday. And with me today I have Riyath Hamedi, is a honeyman extraordinaire, Sally Prosser, much-loved UAE food blogger, and chef in the sky, Christopher Graham. He's at Atmosphere Burj Khalifa. I want to go to the text lines now because we're doing the mystery ingredient competition. We do have one more clue, but I do want to have a look at some of the wrong answers so people know what we're going. The prize is a 500 dirham voucher at Atmosphere Burj Khalifa, so really, really nice prize today. Pomegranate, it's not pomegranate. Thanks for everybody who's texted that in. Strawberry, it's not strawberry. It's not honey. I think everybody's being influenced by you, Riyath. And it's not grapefruit. But let's give you another clue. Maybe you'll be able to guess it from this.
Guess the ingredient.
So final clue, clue number six to go into the draw.
Okay, so today's mystery ingredient imparts a strong flavor and has been used to make syrup to flavor honey and salads. Both leaves and flowers of today's mystery ingredient can be used, for example, to garnish a pate or on cold fruit or cream soups, and can be frozen into ice cubes to decorate drinks.
I think it might give it away. We've got a lot of right answers, but last chance. If you want to go into the draw for that 500 dirham voucher, get your answer in now. So throughout the show today, we've been talking summer food trends and the summer food trends that we absolutely love. But now I want to talk about the summer food trends that we absolutely hate, and they should just get rid of them. So I've got an article here that lists a couple of things they are deeming food trends that we need to say goodbye to. The first one is it's avocado on toast and everything avocado. I think everybody just loves avocado so much. And they said particularly avocado to the toast that costs about, you know, 30 dirhams at any shop or any cafe. Chef, avocado on toast?
I don't mind it in moderation, but I think it's a bit much now. It's okay. Everywhere, and charging that much for it is a bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. In the beginning, it was nice to see it on the menu. It was quite refreshing. And now you're just kind of seeing it everywhere. And people are trying to do their little bit, their little take, or they're sort of experimenting with different sort of spices on top and whatever. But it's just enough is enough, people. You know what I mean? Be more creative, chefs, restaurants, cafes. You know, give us something else.
I want to ask you, Sally, about this, because I think there's nothing more that a food blogger loves than cutting up a beautiful avocado and doing something creative. It looks beautiful in pictures.
It looks beautiful, especially if there's a poached egg that you can poke and, you know, do a boomerang on it as the yolk spills over the creamy avocado onto the lovely toasted sourdough.
You can see why she's professional.
I really like avocado on toast. I think it's here to stay because it's become a new classic. A really good ripe avocado on a very nice piece of bread, you know, as I say, sourdough, I agree with you, Riyath. I like Baker and Spices one. They put pomegranate molasses on, which gives that little and a bit of dukkha.
That's
dukkha nice,
as well.
All with an egg on top. Done well, it's just a classic. I often have it at home for lunch. It ticks all the boxes of health and flavour. So, yeah, I'm happy for it to stay. But done badly or lots of sort of trickery around it, yeah, I'll leave it.
Another thing on this list is popcorn. And I don't know, popcorn is more of a winter thing, sometimes I feel. But the way people are doing them, trying to like freshen up the popcorn and, you know, make different caramel covering and you know, putting different sweets inside. What do we think of popcorn, Chef?
I like the classics, the cheesy popcorn. Don't mind a bit of cheesy popcorn. But when you go to shopping malls and you see like raspberry cheesecake flavoured popcorn. and all these crazy flavours that are blatantly not natural at all.
Or you go to the cinema and you can do Doritos and caramel together. You can do whatever you...
Yeah, I mean, that's all right. Kind of maybe because that's what I'm used to, perhaps. But all these new mental ones that are just... they've got to be like genetically modified popcorn.
Yeah.
I don't know. They're not real. It's not a real thing. I prefer just classic popcorn, mm-hmm. salty, cheesy, caramel, done. That's it.
So something real that in terms of summer trends that you want to see gone?
Okay, there's a few, but I'll just kind of, there's a couple. The fruit skewers. That drives me mad, to be honest with you. That really kind of incenses me into a rage where I get dizzy. And also kind of like smoothie bowls.
Let's go back. Why are the skewers making you crazy? Because I sometimes like a little bit of a fruit skewer. If they put like little mint leaves in between, it's quite tasty. Or is it just...
Yeah, I mean, I love fruit. And I think they should be eaten in their kind of natural state.
Okay.
But when it's like what we were talking about before, kind of dressing up foods, making them look like something that they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And it just annoys me that, you know, they're cutting them up in a certain way. They're trying to make it look like meat and they're kind of, you know, every little thing in between. It's just, you know, stop it.
Okay, and what was the other thing you said? It's got to be gone.
The smoothie bowls. A smoothie is meant for you to drink it. You know, it's a smoothie. Just drink it. Why do you have to put it in a bowl and then put all these decorative little, whatever they are, these little edible flowers and all these little things.
Bee pollen.
Yeah, you can have all of those amazing things in a beautiful kind of, you know, in a jug. And you just pour it in a nice sort of glass or, you know, in a glass or whatever. But just they're everywhere now. You've seen the pictures of smoothie bowls everywhere. They're everywhere. These Instagrammers and Facebookers and, you know.
Talking about the Instagrammers, Sally, you're a very, very trendy person. Tell us what trends you just fed up, like Ria. They're just, I've had enough.
Oh, I just thought of one, actually. The unicorn trend.
Oh,
so for me, that's the antithesis of everything I stand for in food. Okay, fine for other things, but on food, no. I hate artificial colourings. And yeah, sparkly unicorn food. No, not in my kitchen.
Okay, and chef, you?
Gigantic burgers. I hate them. Yeah, you see them everywhere on Facebook. Burgers that are like 3 foot tall with a million things on that no human in their right mind would ever be able to consume.
I feel like it's a competition.
Yes,
because
yeah.
we get these press releases that say, "Now we have the world's largest, or yeah. the world's most expensive, or the, you know, is it just a way of getting press?"
Yeah. Basically, I mean, you see images and videos online of these kind of foods, and
yeah.
who would want to eat them? They're not even attractive. but yeah, okay, that, and there was one more that really grinds my gears. It's okay. Not necessarily a summer trend, but kale.
Oh,
I'm
no,
ready
but
for kale.
So good
I'm
for
ready
you.
For it to leave now.
Really?
I used to like kale, but now it's everywhere. Everything, kale chips, kale juice, kale
smoothies,
blankets. I don't know. So I'm ready for kale to leave.
So Michelle, you said, "Oh, it's so good for you," but actually, it's been marketed as the only vegetable that is good for you. And a lot of people find it very difficult to absorb the nutrients from kale. So it's great, but don't only eat kale. Spinach or any other green vegetable will give you different things. So kale, as the saint of all vegetables, is wrong.
Oh
there,
my goodness. It's like bad marketing. I've been taken in by the kale police.
There we go.
Ria and Sally, you've got the clues today. Don't reveal what the missing ingredient, but we've got quite a few texts and I want to check if any of these are right. So Nadia is texting rice.
It's definitely not rice, okay. Nadia.
Okay, we've got a raspberry from Andrea.
No raspberries round here. No.
Milk is the ingredient, says Richie.
No.
A lemon from Sana.
Candied lemon is lovely, but it's not lemon.
It's not lemon. Okay, so those are what they aren't. Have we done all the clues today?
Yes.
We have. We have actually. We've done them all.
We've done all
yeah,
the clues
we have
today.
Done them all.
Okay, a few more minutes to get them in to get that 500 dirham voucher. Now, I know that we were talking a little bit earlier about Nigella and the celebrity chefs that we love to look up to in terms of, you know, trends or what recipes they're cooking. And so we asked Jamie Oliver what he's going to be cooking this summer when it comes to summer trends.
When the sun shines, you want to be outside, and cooking outdoors is a joy. Whether you're going to a festival, camping, or just having a barbecue in your own back garden.
The best thing about being outside and food is just the whole social aspect, you know, cooking outside, picnics, sharing stuff about kids, families. I just love it. It's not just about cooking a sausage on a barbecue. Do you know what I mean? There's so much you can do.
So we agree with Jamie. Picnics. I love the idea, though, packing up something, going on a picnic. I know it's a little bit difficult here in the UAE, but that is a lovely summer trend.
Absolutely.
So celebrity chefs, do you look up to them, Chef Christopher? Do you have anybody that kind of inspires you? Perhaps you've worked with some that we deem celebrity chefs.
Celebrity chefs, okay. Chefs who are celebrities through just doing TV programs, not so much. Chefs who were acclaimed chefs before they became celebrities, obviously I have a lot of respect for them. But people who just went on TV to specifically be a celebrity chef, I probably wouldn't like so much. I've known people who set out to actually become celebrity chefs and they're not even that good at cooking.
Do you look up to anybody? It doesn't have to be a celebrity or chefs, you know, that you love. Maybe you have a chef's cookbook at home that you admire, you know, you keep, you've got it signed once.
To be honest with you, I mean, celebrity chefs, one of my favourites, I mean, it's a bit of a cliche, but me and my missus are a bit addicted to Gordon Ramsay. I think everybody is a little bit. But the thing about Gordon is that he's done his thing. He's earned his stars, so to say. And he's very entertaining as well. I like to watch him rip people.
I don't know if you've ever tried preparing a dish of his and putting it on Twitter and asking Gordon to rate it.
No, oh, I my might goodness. Try that actually.
Yeah, you should try that. So if you have one of his, but he sometimes replies, and most of the time to the ones that don't look so good. And he's not as, he's himself when he replies. He's absolutely awful to these poor people. Sally, anybody that you look up to in terms of chefs? And
I'm about simple food, you know, the provenance of ingredients. So I really respect people who look to that. So I've met Giorgio Locatelli many times and gone to the mozzarella factory. I've been to, you know, I think we went to the fish market. You know, he's really into taking things out, keeping things really simple. He's very authentic. I love his food. Also, I really admire Jamie. I mean, before he had, you know, all the money he has now, he put his own fortune on the line to do things he's passionate about. And he has changed things. He's changed the law about sugar
school
in the
lunches,
UK.
Yeah.
School, you know. Some people really, you know, he gets up people's nose, but he's not afraid to, you know, have the courage of his convictions. So he's brilliant.
Are there any famous honeymen out there that you admire?
Not that I've seen loads, not seen that many. But in terms of the chefs, it's not so much kind of like I look up to them as if they're kind of idols or anything like that. But I love how descriptive in terms of language, the way Nigella Lawson uses her ability to communicate, you know, kind of the food. Not that she does it in a kind of in a sultry manner, not just because of that, but it's just the way she's so descriptive about the food and the way she communicates. And, you know, she kind of there's a passion that comes across. And I love people that are kind of can convey that level of passion that they've got for food. And some people sort of, you know, may not see as a really serious chef, but that's not what it's all about. It's about how you communicate something, and I think her ability to communicate what she does in a very kind of descriptive and in a very kind of manner which is so easily kind of digestible to people, that's what I like about her.
It's stuff you can cook from in your own kitchen.
Exactly.
As well. Her books are really thumbed by me. You know, there's a lot of our family favourites. Can I just shout out to Anna Jones as well? She's not as famous as Deliciously Ella, but she should be. She worked at 15 with Jamie Oliver, and her recipes, they're all vegetarian or vegan. They are amazing.
So is she on
beautiful.
Instagram?
We Are Food on Instagram, but she's got two cookbooks out and they're fantastic. Beautiful flavours, really fresh and amazing. Yeah,
Sally, you have a little bit earlier we gave you a packet from Spinneys. They heard that our theme for the show today was summer food trends. They send us a packet and they said, here are some ingredients, here are some things we have in the shop that we think are summer food trends, and we said go and do something with us. So you finished, tell us about your creation.
Okay, so for the savoury element, I use the couscous salad, which has got some lovely toasted cashews. By the look of it, I haven't tasted it, I must say. Some radishes. I think there's some chicken in there as well. I've sort of put that in the centre and put some micro leaves around the outside. combined with some of the spiralized vegetables, just a little bit to make it not too over the top. So there's a pop of color from the beetroot, spiralized beetroot. And then I've put another layer of the tiny, tiny microherbs that they've given us with some of the really delicate flowers. I didn't want to dot big pansies around the outside. And I've just put one edible pansy from their beautiful selection, just as a little highlight. And on a plain white plate, because I think that then shows it off. But I think something like this you can have as a centrepiece and everyone dig in, especially if you made more quantity of it and everyone, you know, it's a centrepiece on the table when you've got your mates coming around.
Shareable.
Yeah, definitely.
So the big question is it Instagrammable? Do we need that white base?
Well, you need natural light, so I can't have that in the studio. But yeah, it could be.
No windows here, yeah.
Could be.
It's lovely, yeah.
Have a look on my Instagram stories and you can tell me whether you think it's all right.
Talking about photographs, Chef Christopher, we had a text in a little bit earlier from Jerry. He says, I love photographing Chris's food, not just because it looks delightfully creative, but also because I get to taste the gastronomic dishes afterwards. Yum, yum, he says.
Good old Jerry.
Yeah, a bit of a fan. So tell me a little bit about what you go through when you're thinking about, okay, the PR people come and we say, Chef, you've got a new menu, we need to take photographs of it. How do you go about that?
I mean, to be honest with you, I'd never do anything different from what I'm actually serving in the restaurant. I always believe that you should portray what you're actually serving. It is quite an art, though, taking pictures of food. It takes time. You need to look at a lot of different angles. You need to be, especially when you're doing a long photo shoot of multiple dishes, you need to be wary of how time is going to affect certain aspects on the plate, like chocolate or sauces or things that drip. But I mean, there's times where, especially with my friend Jerry, who messaged in, there's times where I've been working with Jerry and we've spent 8 hours photographing one burger.
Wow.
And there's other days where I could, you know, go through like 8 or 9 dishes that are way more complex and complicated. So you often find that it's easier to photograph things that are a bit more complex. When it comes to things that are simple, it's you get crazy about the details, one little leaf here or there. Simple is actually difficult when it comes to photography, I believe.
Now I want to move to a little bit of honey tasting. We've saved it till the end, but I will say that my guests have been naughty and they've already had some tastings because they couldn't hold themselves back. So what have you brought for us, Riyadh?
Okay, so we have, because it's the summer and it's all kind of wonderful, and so it's kind of, you know, it sort of evokes fruits and flowers and stuff. So I've got an infusion of raw honey with passion fruit, which the chef has tried. We also have an infusion with blueberries. So it's the raw honey variety, which is based in Carrefour, actually. And also, there's also some different varieties. He's got some white mountainous honey from Kyrgyzstan. He's tried some cinnamon and sesame seed infused honey. Also some of the classic sidr and some lemon and ginger. So which one do you like then, Chef?
Because we've been tasting your food all day, Chef. Now you've got some.
It's a tough call. I really like the raw white mountainous honey, the floral notes, the texture of it. It's fantastic. Like, you don't get a lot of honey that's that kind of intense florally. I also liked the different flavours with the cinnamon and
sesame seed
one, and the lemon zest and ginger was also very nice.
Yeah,
I could definitely have that on a bit of toast.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I do it, on a bit of toast. Sourdough.
We only have a couple more minutes left, but I have time to fit in this.
Food fantasy.
So every week we ask our chefs their food fantasy. Now it's something that really is the ultimate fantasy when it comes to food, whether it's, you know, I've heard Riyadh say before his is to lie on a beach with a bunch of coconuts and just drink them fresh as the waves go by. I think his standards have gone up a bit because I heard last week it's about taking some Michelin star chefs and putting them in his accommodation and making them cook for him or something like that.
Imprisoning them is the right word.
Okay. So, Chef, what would be your ultimate food fantasy?
Despite what we've actually mentioned about American food today, I would like to go on an American food road trip.
Oh, Route 66 or something, yeah?
Yeah, I just think it's such a huge, diverse country and there's so many different varieties of foods. You know, you have your barbecues, etc. But in terms of high-end restaurants and like food places, like California, you know, the wineries, I would love to do that. I would probably like to definitely end up in California, eat at the French Laundry, and have lunch with Thomas Keller.
Okay.
That would probably be the one.
All that's left to do now, I need to reveal the answer to the mystery ingredient. Do we have it? What is it? I don't know what it is.
Go on, Salah, you tell him.
Well, I've just used one in my salad. So it is the pansy. Who knew you could candied pansies? I didn't know about some of the flavours. You've taught me something today. So
yeah, thank you, Producer Joe, for all the clues today. We do have a winner, Jonathan. Well done. A lot of people got it right, but Jonathan is the one that the computer has picked. Thank you, everybody, for a wonderful show. Sally, how can we keep in touch with you?
I'm My Custard Pie everywhere.
Everywhere. Riyadh, how can we find out about you?
On Bilqis Raw Honey on Instagram and also bilqis.com. So, yeah.
And Chef, I think it's a little easy to find you.
Yeah, you can find me at Atmosphere Burj Khalifa or Christy Chef on Instagram.
Yeah, and thank you for sponsoring that 500 dirham voucher that goes to our mystery ingredient competition winner today.